Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We have been repeatedly told there's a deal to be had ending the unprovoked war on Iran. A deal means there's a rough consensus. Given the parties involved, that consensus seems a near impossibility. Also, are Kaya Kallas's days numbered as the EU top diplomat? We can only hope. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here. So what's going on with this memorandum of understanding? I mean, all of us have been watching this very, very closely, obviously, in the last few days, seeing what the final text is going to be, what is mutually understood, what are the timetables. There's a lot of talk about all of this, but none of it is concrete. And until I get some evidence, a shred of evidence, I'm not going to believe it's true. Mark.
Yeah, I don't believe it's true either. This last Thursday saw, an Israeli-Iran exchange of salvos during the week, then an Iranian-U.S. exchange of salvos, and a very upset Trump promising to seize Harg Island and take all of Iran's oil and bring death and destruction and so forth. Again, we had an extra serving of Trump taco salad on Thursday evening. Trump chickened out and suddenly announced there was a deal. And as CNN pointed out in an unusually astute clip, this was the 39th time that Trump has declared that a deal was imminent. I'm so sick of the word deal. It is so demeaning of diplomatic relations and anything that approximate an agreement to end an illegal unprovoked war launched by the United States, like it's some kind of sleazy backroom real estate deal that Trump is shaking hands. And evidently the New York Times tells us that he's extremely frustrated that he can't meet the Ayatollah Mojtaba Khomeini personally, right, to discuss this. After he killed
his father,
all of his entire family, and according to U.S. media reports, crippled him. And he's upset. The man is delusional. He's unhinged, and he's just unbelievable as a leader of what is increasingly not the most powerful country in the world. There's no understanding. There's no agreement, at least in public rhetoric, between the Iranian side, what they're talking, the 14 points that the memorandum is based on, and what Trump keeps ranting about on social media. So unless they're willing to agree to something in private that is not being said public, then there is no deal.
Yeah, I mean, George, it's been reported by some people, and of course, some people claim closer contact with decision makers, is that we've been through this before where Trump has been presented a number of drafts and seems to be warms up to them, and that at the end of the day, he dashes them and wants something new. I'd like to point out to our audience here is that the Americans and the Iranians have never met in person to negotiate. This is all through third parties. And third parties tend to embellish because they want something to move along here. So, you know, George, to get something, you have to give something. Okay. And no one's giving anything here to get something back. And I have to be honest with both of you gentlemen. I'm confused now by some of the things coming out of Tehran. I mean, something will be signed in a few days. What? George, what's your take?
Well, my take, I mean, for what it's worth, is that I think so there will be some kind of an agreement within the next few days. But that doesn't really answer the fundamental
question. But is that like
question.
A framework? Is that like a framework to have an agreement?
Exactly. It's less than that. It's a framework to...
It's a prenuptial.
Prenuptial. Yes, it's a framework. So we have 60 days... in which to conduct negotiations, during which all of the vexing issues will be decided upon.
Yeah, but what does Iran get for that? What does Iran get for that?
Well, that's a very good question. But Trump did hint in his truth that there will be some release of money. I mean, he hinted at it, that there will be some. I mean, he said, it's not going to be right away and whatever. But nonetheless, that's a very good point. But the problem for Trump is that he doesn't really have any good options. I mean, what's his alternative? He can just leave it as a kind of the status quo. Well, that's not sustainable. Not sustainable for the U.S., for Iran, the Persian Gulf countries, the world economy. So that isn't sustainable. He could launch yet another military attack. That, he knows that's going to have a disastrous consequences as the previous attacks did. So, he doesn't have any options other than, so to speak, kick the can down the road, hope that somehow during the next 60 days, something will come up. But it's hard to see how during those 60 days, anything can be negotiated, because Israel has already made clear, and it's not just Netanyahu, but pretty much all of the opposition within Israel, we're not going to accept any of this. This deal, that we're talking about simply is unacceptable to us. We can't allow, the Iranian regime to survive, because as long as it survives, we are in peril. And then this deal involves its survival. So the question then is, will Trump have the gumption, the power to rein in Israel? Well, the omens are not particularly good.
Yeah, I think he just wants to kind of clear the board for one day to celebrate his birthday, this kind of bread and circuses that he has on the White House grounds. Mark, I'm glad that George brought up Israel. This is, they're part of the conflict, but they the only role that they play right now is spoiler. But isn't it kind of eerily familiar to what we had with Gaza? We have a ceasefire, and then we're going to go to phase two. It sounds very much the same. We'll never, if we get to some, let's have an agreement to move forward. That's what it sounds like to me. There's no obligations here. But, when we talk about stage two never happens. And Trump says that Iran will give up all of its nuclear material. I mean, what? This is fantasy, Mark.
Yeah, and it's not just the similarities aren't just to arrangements over Gaza, but also in Lebanon. And you could also throw in Syria and the Minsk protocols and Istanbul agreements in Ukraine as well. As the Russian side has pointed out, and the Chinese and the Iranians are increasingly coming to agree, the United States is not only agreement incapable, but they are simply diplomacy incapable. I mean, they're still not even using the State Department because Trump doesn't trust them. Instead, he's using his slimy real estate buddy Witkoff and his son-in-law Kushner, whom the average person out there listening to this in the audience understands more of the issues for Iran or Ukraine or anything than these two bozos do. So even if there is some type of digital signing of a memorandum, well, that means nothing. The two sides are still fundamentally incompatible. Even at the most basic issues, the frozen funds, i.e. Iranian money that the U.S. and the Gulf states have stolen, Iran says that even to sign the memorandum of understanding, at least part of that needs to be returned up front. And Trump is denying that vociferously on social media, because, of course, that is what he has routinely attacked Obama about for the signing of the JCPOA over years. And he's trying to spin, Iran says promises and will never have a nuclear weapon. They weren't making a nuclear weapon. In fact, that was one of the preambles to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that he ripped up during his first administration. And the U.S.'s own intelligence agency and the IAEA said Iran had no weapons program and hasn't for decades. So he's going to try to spin a defeat into victory. Meanwhile, he can't even meet the most basic concessions, frozen funds, sanctions, much less Iran is demanding that not only should the cessation of hostilities be extended to Lebanon, but that Israel should withdraw all of their troops from southern Lebanon as well. That's never going to happen. There is no possibility of any agreement.
Well, so I mean,
what's going to end up is a bloody status quo with low-level hostilities, with occasional flare-ups into the future, while the rest of the Gulf states in the world slowly hedge towards coming to their own bilateral agreement of terms for restoring traffic through the Strait of Hormuz with Iran, which will maintain control. They're not going to call it tolls. They're going to call it service fees. You know, whatever. It's a protection racket. But they didn't have it before the U.S. attacked them. So,
but George, is it possible that we're just all being set up for, well, at the last second, the Iranians destroyed the process to come to to some kind of agreement that this MOU. Because I think we're all in agreement here that this is just not working. There's no mechanism. There's been no real diplomacy here. Give all the credit to the Pakistanis and the Egyptians and the Turks or whatever. But I mean, if the two principals are not speaking directly, then how can you know the absolute intentions of both sides? And so I think it's being set up to the blame game here. And you already mentioned it, George. Israel is still calling the shots and what Trump can do and what it can't do. That's my conclusion, George.
Well, that could well happen. There's some kind of, you know, they work something out. We got a deal, and then suddenly, Iran has violated the deal and so on. But that's not really very good for Trump, because I don't think Trump wants to restart the bombing. I mean, he wants to avoid that, because he knows last time he did that, that had disastrous consequences. And Iran is now stronger than he was on February the 28th. So he doesn't really want to start that. So he doesn't have any good options at all, other than to hope that Israel is going to play along with this plan. But Israel has already made clear it's not going to do it. So, and Netanyahu's opponents, well, the Naftali Bennett and the rest of them, are already denouncing him for selling out to Iran, because he's sucking up to Trump. So Israel has the easiest mechanisms to hand to end any possibility of agreement. All it has to do is launch an attack in Lebanon, launch an attack on Beirut, and everything just comes to an end. And then that's it. What kind of a deal is there if Iran and Israel are exchanging missiles with one another? And then the pressure will build on the United States. Hey, you can't let our greatest, most wonderful ally in the world face Iran by itself. We have to come in on Israel's behalf. I mean, you know, that's a very easy mechanism, and that's almost certainly what.
Yeah, that was apparently the rationale on February 28th. You can't let our ally down here. It seems to me, gentlemen, this is just a fool's errand, and within 24 hours we'll have some kind of breaking news why this failed, and of course it'll be the usual blame game, but it won't resolve, as Mark has pointed out, a situation that only gets worse and worse. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we will continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're discussing some real news, and the news in focus right now is Kaya Kallas. Right now, the EU's chief diplomat is often referred to. But there is it seems to be a growing trend. We were on top of it over a year ago, that there's growing dissatisfaction with her governance. I don't even know what verb I would use and what she does on a daily basis. But it seems like they're within the European Union, they want to start reining her in, stripping her office of powers, and maybe essentially just moving her on. She will fail upward for sure. They take care of their own. But where is this coming from, George? Because I have a working theory. It's not that they're angry about her aims. It's how she does it. That's the problem.
I think that's right. She has elevated that position into foreign minister of the EU. She's nothing of the sort. It's supposed to be an administrative coordinating position. She's supposed to, you know, coordinate the positions of the national governments. But she parades around as if she is the foreign minister of the EU, much like Ursula von der Leyen parades around that she is the president of the European Union. Neither has been elected to that position. And I think that annoys the heavyweights in Europe, which is France, Germany, and Italy, and they want to bring foreign policy within their domain. And, you know, they, as the leaders of the EU, should be the ones guiding the foreign policy. But I think it's going to be difficult to get rid of her. She has her supporters.
And sure does.
What she has done is to elevate the importance of the most psychotic, the foaming at the mouth, Russophobic lunatics in the EU, namely the Baltic states, Poland, the Czech Republic. And they won't want to see the back of her because they don't want everything to be run by Paris and Berlin. So she's got her supporters and she knows it. And she's already sent out her email and given interviews indicating, hey, I'm not going to go quietly. You know, I'm going to go on doing my job. So I think it's going to be quite difficult to move her out. I don't think it's about policy. I think it's just annoyance about her arrogance.
Yeah, I noticed in one of her social media posts that she claims to have added value to the position. I'm not really sure what that value is. You know, it, again, Mark, I think it's basically it gets down to her behavior and presentation. It's not the policy itself. I would point out, and it's something that we've talked about before, with NATO expansion, you move the center of policy further east, and in George's point, out. It's the further east you go, the more Russophobic it becomes. And so I can see the Germans and the French saying this is not exactly our approach. And it's been captured by the Baltic states, Poland, et cetera, et cetera. They want to readdress that too, possibly. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I like to summarize Kaja Kallas's position as the high foreign policy muckety-muck of the EU. And what we're seeing here, I agree, has absolutely nothing to do with policy. And if she is revolted against or curtailed or replaced, it will have no effect, right? The value she added is an extra frosting layer of Russophobia and anti-Russian signaling and even anti-Chinese signaling, which is that might actually peeve a few people within in the EU a bit much. But it's also structural. This is a case not only of a tepid amount of the member states fighting to retrieve shreds of their foreign policy sovereignty from the Brussels technocrats, but also internecine struggles within inter-EU technocratic offices. The main one pushing this is actually the High Commissioner muckety-muck von der Leyen, whom is leading the charge against Kaja Kallas. Not because there's any difference in foreign policy, but it's internecine struggles of power and egos within offices within the EU technocracy, which is why I hear talk of this. I'm like, who cares? It won't change any policy. It's just this internecine, structural, and ego-driven. If anything, what this shows us is the complete dysfunction of the technocratic structures of the European Union. And
yeah, so George von der Leyen doesn't like to share?
No, I don't think von der Leyen likes to share. But the problem is that Kaja Kallas tends to shoot her mouth off in ways that I think are embarrassing to her and to other European leaders. So apparently the other day she said in private that Israel is pursuing the same policies as apartheid South Africa did. Now, you know, whatever you think of that comment, that obviously is an embarrassment for Europe. It's not anything that Macron or Merz or von der Leyen said, but nonetheless, now it's on the record. And then when she said something like, well, I'd like to see the breakup of Russia, you know, you're not supposed to say that. You know, you're supposed to just, you're supposed to think it, you're supposed to pursue that goal, but you're not supposed to admit it, because that just simply will reinforce Russia's case against Europe. So the problem is that she is a loose cannon, and that is an embarrassment for Europe. There is also at least some parts of the European electorates, because Macron knows that there's a real danger that the National Rally will come to power next year. And then in Germany, the Alternative für Deutschland will do well in the September elections. So they have to, at the very least, make some pretense that they're interested in peace. They're not, but they have to at least say it. I mean, like Macron says, you know, one of these days I'm going to call up Putin. And then Giorgia Meloni would say something like, well, you know, maybe we should talk to Russia at some point. So they do feel that there is at least some, they need to make some pretense to their publics that they're interested in peace. Of course, it's a completely fraudulent, but this is an unpopular war, and they know that it's an unpopular war, and they are afraid of the electoral consequences.
You know, Mark, I think Kaikal will probably stay where she is because they can't admit that their policy is wrong.
I don't know if Kaya Kallas will stay where she is, because, again, it's not about policy. It's not about admitting a policy was wrong. It's just replacing one Russophobe with maybe a Russophobe who doesn't shut her mouth off stupidly about things she's not authorized to shoot her mouth out about. As for some type of diplomacy with Russia, that actually happened in the last week very quietly. Ambassadors from France, Germany, and the UK, the big EU3, requested a meeting with one of the deputy foreign ministers of Russia, and that happened in Moscow. And evidently the Europeans, their idea of negotiations with Russia is they demanded an immediate unconditional ceasefire, and that they will then put troops on the ground in Ukraine when that happens, which is essentially as demanding Russia's surrender and capitulation. And Russia just laughed them out of the room. So
for our viewers, it was pointed out to me that if tea was served at this meeting, it never got cold because the meeting was over by then.
Yeah. There isn't going to be any dialogue in the future. There would have to be a complete regime change of political leadership in the EU, and I'm not optimistic about that. I'm not optimistic that the National Rally Party can come to power in France or the AfD in Germany, because that's the way they're structured, managed democracy. All of the rest of the parties will align themselves in both countries to prevent any change, primarily in foreign policy and geopolitics, which is, you know, orthodoxy.
Yeah, and we have the Romania precedent, okay? They can cancel one election in the EU, they can cancel any of them and cancel parties, take candidates off the ballot and whatnot. But, you know, George, also, there is also you know, the perception within Europe and among elites as well is that Kaya Kallas is just a one-trick pony. She's just anti-Russia, and Europe is grappling to find its own place in the world. I mean, some of the things she says about China is ghastly as well. I mean, we have to point out too is that the Russians won't talk to her. Secretary of State Marco Rubio won't talk to her. I'll give her credit. I mean, she's a celebrity online. I'll give her that. That's true.
She's a social media influencer.
Yes, she's an influencer. That's what she is, Mark. She's an influencer. Anyway.
I think.
And maybe she should go into cosmetics and stuff. I mean, because she's got a pretty good, you know, I mean, got to use everything you got. Go ahead, George.
No, I think so. But the problem is that Russia has become the overwhelming, overriding project of the EU. If you look at Ursula von der Leyen's Twitter page, there's a Ukrainian flags everywhere. And everything is about statements about Ukraine, 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 Ukraine. And you think you're supposed to be the president of the EU Commission. You've got nothing else on your agenda. You're not worried about anything else other than Russia and Ukraine.
Well,
neither country of which is in the EU.
If you're talking about Ukraine, you're not talking about Pfizer, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're not talking about Pfizer. You're not talking about the deindustrialization of Europe. You're not talking about Europe falling behind in high tech. You're not talking about high energy prices. You're not talking about the problems of agriculture and so on. You've got everything that's going on is deleterious to Europe's future. She's celebrating now that on Monday, the EU will begin accession negotiations with Ukraine and Moldova. I mean, you know, what kind of lunacy is this? Moldova, the poorest country in Europe, is going to be hauled into Europe. In bringing Ukraine into the EU, you're actually bringing war right into the heart of Europe. This is insane. But this is what, but this is von der Leyen, the most senior official in the EU, and she's rejoicing at this, celebrating.
You know, Mark, I think they will keep Kaya Kallas because Kaya Kallas makes all the rest of them look more intelligent.
Let them continue with their anti-Russian signaling and propaganda. It doesn't do anything to Russia. The rest of the world just is tired of it at this point. And all of this, while they're concentrating on this instead of their own real problems, they're just hastening the dysfunction and collapse into irrelevance of Europe as a whole. Let them continue. I think it's funny.
Yes, we have consensus is that many of these figures in the European Union, their common denominator is that they're influencers. I think they should be selling commercial products.
They're a better comedian than Zelensky.
Yep, there you go. All right, gentlemen, on that note, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.